Wait, is Chris doing the show this week, though?
I think so.
No, it's Justin again.
I want Justin.
Yeah.
The Armstrong quotient of the show is all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, how strong are your arms?
Pretty strong. No, they're not.
Welcome to What's the Deal, the Seinfeld review show that's thirsty for your approval. Each week we dissect every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today, as always, are Christopher Young.
Hello.
And Patrick Armstrong.
Hello.
I'm Cameron Wong, and this is episode 28, and today we will be looking at season 3, episode 11, The Alternate Side. Ooh, Woody Allen.
Woody Allen indeed.
The famous director.
He's mm-hmm. famous lots of things. Mostly director.
Chris, you're back.
I am back. Yeah.
How's it going?
It's going well. I'd like to stop for just a moment and thank Mr. Justin Armstrong for filling in my stead. You did a great job. Good job, Justin.
That's very kind of you. How many of the episodes did you listen to while Justin was on?
All of them.
You know who's a great guy?
It's Justin.
Yeah, he's great. We're glad that he'll be taking over your spot in a full-time position about halfway through this episode.
Me too. I'm hungry.
So, Christopher, how are you? Tell us about it.
I'm pretty good. I'm back for the week. I'm back in BC for 3 weeks, which is exciting because this is the cool coast. It's the nice coast. It's where the cool kids hang out.
You got that right.
I'm back because I'm working on a movie, which is exciting.
You're filming your brother's wedding.
That's right. Yeah. And he's big and Greek and fat. it's a recipe for success.
This sounds good. It sounds kind of like a movie I know of. It's called Mamma Mia.
Is that the one?
You were thinking of Muriel's Wedding.
Four Weddings and a Funeral?
The Wedding Planner.
Rosemary's
Batman.
Wedding.
A Fish Called Wanda.
No, it's A Fish Called Wedding.
That's exciting, filming a movie.
Yeah, it's something that my production partner and I have been working on for about a year. So we're getting ready to start on Saturday, next Saturday,
and film Hollywood for North.
Hollywood North,
Toronto?
That's right.
I can't remember which one's Hollywood.
I think it's Vancouver.
Who knows?
I think it's us. I think it's
Yellowknife.
Maybe just Canada.
Maybe I think Yellowknife.
Yellowknife.
I'm pretty sure it's Yellowknife.
Yellowknife does shoot a lot of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you need snow, what are you going to do?
Yeah. All the Snow Dogs movies are filmed there.
Like the Cuba Gooding Jr. one?
Was there more than one Snow Dogs?
I don't know, probably.
What
direct
the hell
video,
happened to Cuba
direct
Gooding
to DVD,
Jr.?
Direct to Netflix, whatever, one of those.
Well, he burned in a grease fire.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense.
How are you doing, Cameron?
Why are you doing this? You know, Chris hasn't been here. Why are you going last now?
I don't know.
I'm the one that asks the questions around here.
You're always sad when you go last.
No, I love it.
Okay.
I refuse to answer that question.
Cuba Gooding Jr. died in a grease fire. Very tragic.
No, he's still around.
Oh.
He was in a movie recently.
What movie?
Was it Snow Dogs?
Snow Dogs 10.
I don't know. I'm actually looking at them. I don't know any of them, but he was in a movie called Don John's Addiction that came out this year.
Snow Dogs 10, still dogging it.
Hey, wait a minute. So Don John's Addiction, he was in this. It's got Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Scarlett Johansson, Julianne Moore, and Tony Danza.
Are you sure you're not thinking of Don Johnson's Dixon?
I'm actually
a pretty good cast.
I'm
it's
pretty
a pornographic
sure.
film with Don Johnson and Cuba Gooding Jr.
Hey, Patrick, how are you? You doing all right?
Good. I'm doing good.
Share some
news with us.
Had
a donut just now. It's pretty good.
You like
donuts?
Lemon
donut.
Okay.
Came all the way from Portland.
Anything else?
The donut came from Portland?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Fresh baked this morning.
I mean, it's closer than where the donuts at Tim Hortons come from. I'm not sure why you're so surprised.
I don't know.
Yeah, it was good.
Sounds exotic.
I had my neighbors truck it to me this morning. Last night, they drove to Portland for me. And this morning, they picked up the donut and brought it home.
Is
only
trucking
cost
it
me
the correct?
$500.
Wow, is trucking
you got
the
your
correct
neighbors
verbiage?
Is a real donut mule.
Mm-hmm.
I said donut mule.
What they do is they swallow the donut.
Mm. Yeah. In a little
you know,
balloon.
And you can imagine the rest. It's delicious, yeah. Though. Lemon filled. It's very nice of them.
So my question to you is trucking the correct verbiage for how they got this donut?
Maybe they carred it? I don't know. What, it, is a smart? Or wait, not a smart. A mini? Is that a truck?
A mini?
Semi. You're thinking of semi.
No, the mini.
How did they ship this to you?
They just brought it.
Did they put it in a manila envelope?
No, they kept it in a box, and then they brought it to Victoria.
Well, that's why we're all here in America.
Mm-hmm. Chris, you missed a heck of an episode last week.
Yeah, way to bail out on the worst episode of Seinfeld.
Probably the worst episode.
Yeah, I mean, I made this whole thing about shooting a movie up. Like, I just really didn't want to watch that episode of Seinfeld.
I'm not surprised.
It was really bad. I should have made up an excuse like that.
I'm almost considering going back and watching it after how bad you guys hated it.
I mean, my problem is that that was the excuse I was going to use, and I just knew Patrick wouldn't believe that I was also going to be shooting a movie.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing, Cameron? The same movie.
Could be.
How's your movie coming, Cameron?
It's really good.
Yeah?
It's really good. It's going to be the first full feature Vine. So it's completely shot using Vine. It's edited on Vine. And it is, much like the other Vines, like about 5-6 seconds long. And then I take that and that's it. I just loop it not endlessly. It's an hour and 23 minutes. And it's just kind of about the human experience. And each section of it is, you know, like you blink and you'll miss it. And so the idea is that over time, you start to see the patterns and you start to see the shapes of the movie and the shape of humanity as a whole.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's I've got some shots of dinosaurs in it, too. It's kind of like Tree of Life.
Oh,
sounds
sweet.
Good.
Yeah, it's good. Other than that, I am well. Thank you for asking me earlier, Patrick. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I lashed out at you.
It's okay. I know you get angry when things get out of order.
Well, we went to Costco today, and, you know, I was tired after that.
Mm-hmm. You have a nap?
Very briefly. Mm. It was a nice little nap, and good trip to Costco. Mm-hmm. Bought a lot of things there today.
Yeah.
Where's that hyper wallet? Where's that hyper wallet transfer?
I tried to figure it out, but I can't figure it out. I'm just going to have to give you cash. I don't understand hyper wallet. I thought I did, but I do not.
That's fine. I'll accept your cash later.
Yeah.
But now it's on the record here on What's the Deal, so if you don't pay up and your knees get accidentally broken.
Mm-hmm. This will be admitted to evidence in the small claims case against me owing you $80. And
couldn't it also be admitted to evidence in the assault case wherein Patrick has broken knees?
That was my second point. This will be evidence in that trial as well.
It's circumstantial.
Isn't that double jeopardy? You can't admit the same piece of evidence twice.
No, double jeopardy.
That's what double jeopardy means.
that's you can't be charged with the same crime twice.
I just really like misunderstanding what double jeopardy is.
Double jeopardy is just a movie. Or wait,
it's also that part of Jeopardy.
I was going to say,
I think that is that what it's based on? Is it a Jeopardy movie? Is that what double jeopardy is?
It's based on the episode of Jeopardy where Tom Lee Jones guest starred or guest hosted.
Mm-hmm.
Is Double Jeopardy the third U.S. Marshals movie?
It's the second.
I didn't kill my wife.
It was
wife.
A prequel, I think.
I thought The Fugitive was the first U.S. Marshals movie.
The Fugitive was the first one filmed, but Double Jeopardy was a prequel, and then there was U.S. Marshals. Then U.S. Marshals 2, Back in the Habit.
Was Double Jeopardy really a prequel to...
No,
I don't think it's part of the canon of U.S. Marshals.
It's not part of the Fugitiveverse.
No.
And there was that TV series first, right?
Well, yeah, but I was just wondering about the movie. Well, that's interesting. So
there was a Double Jeopardy TV series?
No, the Fugitive.
Oh, there's a Fugitive TV series.
So wait,
well,
so
because
are we
the guy
saying...
that killed Alex Trebek's wife had a one arm.
Mm-hmm.
So is he not the same character that he is in The Fugitive?
No, and the points are worth twice.
I am so confused.
I'm not. Let's do Seinfeld. Want to
talk about Seinfeld?
Barely. But you know what? You know what's an important part, actually, of talking about Seinfeld? It's going to whatsthedealshow.com, where you can check out all the show notes, the little pictures, everything that we've got curated for you. It's on display right there. We've done the hard part. We've collected the data. Now you just get in there and you read it. So maybe you want to know about how in U.S. Marshals, Tommy Lee Jones, his name is Travis Lehman, his name is Marshall Samuel Gerald, but in Double Jeopardy, his name is Travis Lehman. We have those facts there. We have them for you.
We have them all. On your favorite U.S. Marshals podcast.
This week's episode, The Alternate Side, George decides to take over for Sid, the neighborhood man who moves cars from one side of the street to the other to avoid paying parking tickets. Jerry gets his car stolen. Elaine is dating a much older man who has a health problem. And Kramer, while he's making his acting debut in the new Woody Allen movie. And it's a hell of an episode.
Yeah, it's good.
It's the opposite of last week's episode.
Yeah, I think it even starts strong. I think the monologue is pretty good because it's short. He just does one bit and then it cuts to the beginning of the episode. He just talks about how car alarms act like crazy people, but Jerry wants a more discreet one, you know, that just kind of nudges you that you're doing the wrong thing.
Now,
did you guys ever wake up?
Did they?
Never.
Yeah, I never
maybe,
woken up by a car alarm.
Like once when I was a child, maybe.
I think it's probably happened. It wasn't so traumatic that it's like burned into my memory or anything like that.
Did they wake you up a lot, Chris?
No. I don't think I've ever been woken up by a car alarm. And those car alarms that I know go off outside because I sleep right above lots of parked cars and such, and they go off all the time, and I've never been like, I was asleep, jerk.
Now, are you asking this, Chris, because you think that car alarms are alarms that people have set to wake up and they're using their car?
That's such a good idea. It's like a rooster for the neighborhood.
Well, and if you're one of those people that normally hit snooze, this one you literally have to get dressed and go outside and turn off the car.
And then you might as well commute on your job to work, you know?
Yeah.
Commute to work. This is a good idea.
That is a literally $1 million idea. If the $1 million is the amount of time and money that we've wasted on this product, that's terrible.
You know, I think I'm just kind of used to car alarms as part of the environment now. Like when I hear them, I do not really notice them at all. It never occurs to me that someone's stealing my car. I just, like, even if there aren't that many cars around, I assume it's not my car and then no one is stealing anything.
Well, I remember this one time where, Patrick, wasn't this with you and I when we were helping Cameron move? Mm-hmm. And
oh, yes.
Yeah, and... we accidentally, Cameron was upstairs and he was doing something already and we were trying to get some stuff out of the car and we set Cameron's car alarm off and it took Cameron like 10 minutes to come down because he didn't even realize that that alarm going off was his.
Well, I tried to call Cameron, but he could not hear me because the car alarm was deafening compared to my voice.
Mm.
Well, I just didn't even know that my car had that possibility of doing that. Because back in the day, the car alarm was something that you purchased separately and had installed in your car. It was very uncommon to have them built in. So I don't really understand how the built-in alarm works.
Me neither.
And I think that's part of the reason why we feel like car alarms aren't bothering us as much now is actually because I think we hear them less often now. I think the technology's actually improved.
Oh, could be.
Maybe.
Did you guys ever see or hear, I guess, more like the car alarms that were super sensitive? Like they can be so sensitive that just like a car driving by it can set it off. And they had these ones that would speak to you. Are you guys familiar with this?
Yeah, I think I am.
Yeah, so you'd walk by it, and then this voice would come on. It's like, please step away for the vehicle, or from the vehicle, or the alarm will sound in 5, 4, 3. And then if it got down to 1, then, you know, that and the lights are going, and it's just a disaster. Yeah, and honestly, the first time that happened, I was terrified. I was just walking down the street, and all of a sudden, this, like, booming voice, like Oz coming out of a frickin' car, just starts shouting at me to get away from the vehicle, like some crazy lady computer that's been built into the car.
It seems like the one in RoboCop.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, RoboCop. It makes me think that RoboCop's going to pop out of the trunk.
Or, like, the car alarm in RoboCop where the robot arm grabs the carjacker by the balls and then electrocutes him or something. RoboCop.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So speaking of cars getting stolen, we're in the apartment. Jerry's frustrated because his car's been stolen.
Wouldn't you be?
Frustrating thing to have happen.
Yeah, he comes in. Jerry and George come in. Jerry's wearing some kind of bizarre sweater. George has a very ill-fitting, I think, a Yankees hat. And, Jerry's car's been stolen.
That would really be an unfortunate situation.
Mm-hmm. And more than that, I guess Jerry has a car phone, which I kind of forgot was a thing that even existed.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, I think George or Kramer, suggests that he call the car thief. And, he reaches him. The car thief is unapologetic.
And I mean, Larry David, once again, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was that, this was the least Larry David sounding Larry David voice I think I can remember on the show.
He was really doing a voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
but it was him then.
It's funny, though, because up until this episode, I've never noticed, I mean, except for like later episodes when like George works for the Yankees, I'd never noticed that Larry David was doing a voice on the show. But this one I noticed right away.
Well, see, usually it sticks out to me like a sore thumb. Whereas with this, I was kind of straining between thinking it was him and thinking it was not him.
I think it's because the thief was so unapologetic. It reminded me of when Larry David knows he's in the wrong. He's completely unapologetic. Like, I mean, Larry David, the character on Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's good, though.
Yeah, it is good.
You know, while we're on it, though, the car phone, there's two things I want to bring up about the car phone. One question, the other one just kind of a statement. But do you guys remember how back in the day people used to buy the antenna for car phones and put them on their cars but not have a car phone?
I did not know that was a thing.
Why would they do that?
To give the impression that they had a car phone, to like, because it was like a status thing, you know, it was like having the silver lady on the front of your vehicle, or like the Jaguar leaping off the hood.
But it seems like putting the Jaguar little dongle thing onto your Honda Civic.
Did you know anyone that did this, Cameron?
No, I did not, but it was very popular. Like, you'd see them all over the place, and people definitely did not have that many car phones. I mean, the plans were like hundreds of dollars a month.
My dad had the brick. I remember that. Although I remember my
Motorola
Uncle Scott.
StarTAC?
Yeah, my Uncle Scott, he had a car phone. I don't remember what model it was, but I remember that like it sat in like a cradle where like below the dash.
Yeah, it looked like just one of the kind of phones that you used to get from the phone company before you could buy your own phone.
Yeah. Only in the car.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, back in the day, that would have been amazing. You're in some car, and then you hear the ringing, and you know it's a phone, but how could that be? How is that possible? Mm-hmm. And you ask, like, what is that noise? And then they pick it up. It's like, oh, it's my phone. And they pull it up from that center console like it's nothing and answer their tethered phone in the car. That would have just blown my little mind.
So do you think if you were in a family, so I don't know how you guys answered the phone or were instructed to answer the phone when you were kids, but when I was a kid, I always had to answer the phone Armstrong residence, Patrick speaking. How may I help you? You know, and then they'd say, oh, can I speak to your mom? And they'd say, yes. And I'd be like, mom, phone.
That's
Do you think in the car, you're like, Armstrong car, Patrick speaking. Think that's how it happened?
Armstrong car? I wish, because you know what? I had the exact same thing. I was taught to answer the phone. You'd say, hello, you know, like this, hello, this is the Wong residence, Cameron speaking, or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a very polite phone answering script. I actually, when I was in elementary school, loved to take out these little illustrated books about good manners. And there was definitely one about answering the phone.
I can't remember how my parents instructed me to answer the phone when I was a kid.
I can only imagine what it ended up being.
Hello.
Hey.
Sup to you. Yeah.
You definitely did not answer with sup.
So.
I think it was something like...
Cowabunga.
Good afternoon. You've reached the Young Residents. We cannot take your call right now because I am 7.
Chris didn't grow arms until he was 9.
Nope.
So...
I had a dial with a pencil in my mouth. Like that kid with the tractor. And the no arms.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Kid was like on Oprah because like he was on the tractor, and then he got gonorrhea, and then like fell off the tractor, and his like arms, mom, it really happened, and then his arms like got all flayed and stuff like that. So we came back into his house, and then he went into the bathtub because he didn't want to bleed all over the damn place. And he used his pencil in his mouth to dial 911, and then they came and they got him. And they, I don't know if they sewed his arms back on or anything. Maybe he still uses that pencil.
I think if your arms are flayed, they don't just sew them back on.
All right, fine. Stapled them back on. Jesus.
That's a tough kid that he's walking around with no arms, bleeding all over the place.
Tough kid, all right.
I mean, I was impressed until I realized he called 911. That's only 3 numbers. Talk to me when you dial the whole phone number.
Maybe he dialed the non-emergency version of 911.
Yeah, okay, because I want 10 numbers. I want the area
just
code.
Chilling in the tub, you know?
Yeah,
filling
he just...
with blood.
He just didn't want to, you know, he wasn't sure if it qualified as an emergency. He was so polite. He just calls the police station front desk. I'm not feeling very good.
Yeah. He read it in a book on polite manners that he got from the library.
Yeah, it was called If Your Arms Are Flayed.
So while Jerry's on the phone with this car thief, this unapologetic car thief, he's not getting anywhere with him. And Kramer, he makes a motion that, he wants the phone. He's gonna take care of the situation. But really, Kramer just wants the thief to return the gloves in the glove box.
Which is, a great Kramer line. It's actually like a perfect Kramer. This is real Kramer we're seeing right here.
Yeah, it's good.
So I did like that line. I liked it a lot. And I don't know, it was nice to... This whole episode, I feel like we really kind of see the characters as we're used to seeing them in the future.
Yeah, it's like they're hitting their stride.
Yeah, totally.
And from the car thief, we also learned that... Jerry first asked how you cross the wires, but he didn't cross the wires. The keys were just left in the car. And that's how Sid left the keys in the car.
Have you guys ever had a car thievery sort of moment? I'm not saying you stole it, but did you ever have like an act of theft against a vehicle or something you've owned?
I watched the movie Gone in 60 Seconds.
That's close enough.
My mom's car got stolen once.
Did she get it back?
Yeah.
Was it in good condition?
Yeah, it's fine.
Did they have the Credence tape still in there?
I think they broke a mirror. That's about it.
Oh, that's not bad.
Mm. What about you, Cameron?
Well, I had the Ford Festiva back in the day, which is obviously a prime target for thieves. Mm-hmm. You see an 89 Ford Festiva, you know there's going to be valuables in there.
Yeah.
I left
maybe a couple CDs.
Well, there were in there, and I had my Panasonic Shockwave, the metal one, in there. And actually, someone stole that right out of the school. They smashed my window and took it.
That's a pretty nice Discman.
It was. It was a great Discman. So I got another one, and I learned a lesson. But
you know, as inconvenient as Discmans and portable CDs were, I really did like portable CD players. I had a million of those things, and they were great.
Like, you had a million CD players?
I probably had five different portable CD players.
Well, because you couldn't have a CD disc change, like a portable CD disc changer, so Chris just carried five and
that's right,
had
yeah.
them all playing at once and would just
sometimes I like spun them around in my hands as though they were rotating the discs.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you guys, I guess Patrick, you wouldn't, but Chris, do you remember my old Discman, my first one? Because I also had quite a few, but they were constantly improving. And my first one was when Discmans were first becoming popular. And honestly, it was so big. It was so insanely big. And kids asked me if it was a multi-disc one, like it had a changer built into it. That's how big it was.
Nice.
It was so cheap.
Did it come from Costco?
Probably. It had no like anti-skip, so like literally if I was listening to it in the car and the car kind of hit a bump in the road, song skips.
You know how in like My Fair Lady or something like that, there's always the scene in any movie where someone has to learn to be a fancy person, like an aristocrat. You know, there's that scene where they walk with the book on top of their head and to have like really good steady posture and not bounce around too much while they walk. I feel like our generation learned that by having non-anti-skipping CD players and trying to walk down the street while listening to music.
That's right. Now these kids with their iPods are just going to be just all skittery and jittery while they're walking like crackheads.
How are they going to be ready for the debutante ball?
They're not.
They won't.
For the cotillion.
They won't.
Didn't you hear Chris say crackheads?
Yeah. All these kids walking around all shaky with meth mouth and everything. What with their non-skipping music.
And I was going to say, that's the whole reason, because they didn't the CD players like we did.
Yeah. They got their iPods.
Their Zunes.
Their
creative jukeboxes.
Their Panasonic 3DOs.
How about their iRivers? Do you remember those things?
Oh yeah. I knew a guy that was all about his iRiver because it had an optical audio out, and I was like, "Who cares? You're playing MP3s."
Got to squeeze all the quality out you can get.
Guess
you zinged that sucker.
Oh yeah.
So Sid comes up, and I guess we learn that Sid is the guy who, on the block, he moves all the cars around during the day, I guess, to avoid having to buy a private parking space. You know, if there's like a 2-hour maximum or they're doing street sweeping and you got to move to one side of the street, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's his job. And I guess he gets paid about $50 a month to do this. And George is quite intrigued by this job because he's not working. You know, and Sid feels pretty bad about this whole situation. Now he doesn't feel that bad.
I don't think he feels that bad. He's like, I'm sorry, Jerry. Maybe I'm too old for this. By the way, I'm going on vacation. He doesn't seem that broken up.
He seems to feel pretty bad. You know,
I think for the sort of person that he is, that is the sort of level of.
Maybe.
Yeah, like once you get to know Sid, that you'd see that just the fact that he doesn't challenge him like he challenges George on everything, that you can tell that he's being legitimately, I don't know, forthright about his emotions in this scene.
He's a sincere man. Yeah, he's not feeling good about it, but, you know, Jerry, I guess, has insurance for the car. And we also learn that Kramer is going to be in a Woody Allen movie.
He sure is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd be excited.
Yeah, I guess he's just going to be, an extra. He's going to be on the street. This whole scene here, it really sets up the whole episode really well. There's one last piece that they haven't set up yet, but at the very beginning of the next scene, they set it up. I think they're really firing on all cylinders here. It's like a well-written opening scene.
Now, let me ask you this. At the very end of this scene, Sid has a conversation with Jerry about saying this Wednesday and next Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you land on this?
I say if it's the Wednesday coming up, it's just Wednesday. If it's the Wednesday after the Wednesday coming up, it's next Wednesday.
So what if it's, what if we're on a Thursday? Are you going to say Wednesday for the following one? You're not going to say next Wednesday?
If we're on a Thursday, then the next Wednesday coming up is Wednesday. The next Wednesday is the next Wednesday.
See, even your explanation is confusing, even though you're saying it's very straightforward.
I know.
Because the next Wednesday is, you know, the upcoming one.
No, it's not.
It is. Do you know the problem is there's an ambiguity whether next means the coming one or the following one. It can mean both. So I think the problem is that that word can mean both. So if you always said coming or following, then
your ambiguity.
Where do you land on this, Cameron?
I always like to just say next Wednesday, and it meant like whatever Wednesday was coming up, like literally next, the nearest Wednesday. But you know, I've had this conversation many times, and so I feel like generally people like next Wednesday to mean not the current Wednesday, but the Wednesday after that one. So what, and so I tried to do that for a while, but that wasn't really helping me. So now I just basically say next week on Wednesday or something like that.
That's a good way to do it.
Yeah. So I specify by saying the week as a modifier.
Good one.
Nice. I know I cracked
solved it.
Killed that shit.
Hey.
Because, like, right after the Enigma in World War II, this was the next big thing people were working on, and I got this one.
Took 60 years, but Cameron got it.
Finally got it. What's next?
Listening.
What do you guys need next? I got it.
Let's go through more Seinfeld.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, in the next scene.
Yeah, so we're in a car rental place. I guess Jerry's getting the loaner rental that his insurance is providing. And he's there with Elaine, and we learn that Elaine is dating a 66-year-old man.
Now, he's very smart.
Very smart.
But I'll tell you this right now. 66 is too old.
Yeah, and how old is Elaine? She's maybe 27, something like that?
I think she's like 30.
30. Okay, even so, that's more than twice her age. That is a little weird.
Yeah, he's an old guy.
He's too old for her.
He could be she could be his last of like six children, and the age would still work out.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
Well, how old would you go, Patrick?
If I were a woman who was 30?
You're you.
Oh, how old would I go?
Well, okay, well,
maybe 10.
Yeah, just you.
Just me. Maybe 10 years.
10 years. So you'd go up to, what is that, 37, 38?
37, yeah, 37.
But you're going to be 28 this year, right?
Yeah, in about 6 months.
So 37, 38.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
How about you, Chris?
That's probably my upper limit.
I don't know. I don't know if there's a cap on this. It just becomes, you know, more and more, you know.
110.
Not 100.
If I just liked the woman, you know, that might be fine.
Well,
but
so
I feel like my feeling is that it would be a non-starter if she was over 10 years older than me.
Yeah, I can go with 10 years is about it.
I think that sounds about safe.
But I mean, you know, just for like a little while.
Just a little tryst.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that she's got that to like on the table now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know,
inevitably she listens to this show and she'll know what's coming, what the schedule is.
Definitely. We're really big with women ages 35 to 45.
It's fine. I'm not going to ruin her or anything. I'm not going to let her ruin me.
The Scarlet Letter.
Whatevs.
So, Jerry comes up to the counter and says he says he's reserved a car, and he has a joke. You know, he says he's reserved a medium and his friend is a small or something like that.
The joke is that he says he made a reservation for a midsize, and his friend here is a small.
Yeah. It's an okay, it's a real like dad joke, but it's not a terrible joke.
He was very proud of himself.
She is stone faced. She does not appreciate this joke.
Well, it was, I mean, let's face it. You're in there all day. Car rental place can't be a great place to work. The customers are probably always angry.
Yeah. Well, every time I've ever been to a car rental place, almost every time, maybe there's been some kind of problem.
Well, this is the thing. Unless you're working in, say, Hawaii, and you're the person renting the car and you don't take them back. If you're just renting the car in Hawaii, odds are a lot of tourists, they're happy. You know, mm-hmm. it's a place that, you know, it's not like landlocked, right? You know,
they're
it's
on
like
a honeymoon, their anniversary, family vacation, and the family vacation's just starting, so it's not stressful yet.
Mm-hmm. So that would be okay, but anywhere else, especially, you know, like continental North America, most people have their own cars, and so they'll be driving. But, you know, anywhere else, I just think it's a hassle. Most of the time, it's because there's a problem.
Yeah.
I've never actually had a problem renting a car.
You're lucky. Usually,
is that true? Maybe it's not. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we back down from that pretty quickly.
It's always been they don't have the car, or you like you're in a city you're not familiar with, and you like reserved a GPS. They don't have the GPS. You know, something like that. The car isn't there, and they won't rent you a different size because you're on some like corporate account. It's terrible.
It's kind of the last bastion of bad reservation experiences. I feel like videos used to be probably one of the big ones, but those are basically gone now.
I guess airline flights, you know, you can get bumped from a flight.
That's canceled. True. That's another bad one.
How but does I that feel work? Like that's, How did that's, you get bumped from a flight?
They overbook the flight because a certain percentage of people don't show up for flights. But if everyone shows up, you get bumped.
Who gets bumped?
Or maybe a flight gets canceled and they try to amalgamate the flights and someone gets bumped, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now that you get bumped less often from overbookings now because less people book through agents. But a lot of it has to do with the booking through the agencies that would create these problems.
Yeah. And well, things like hotline and stuff, too, that really affects it. But at the very least, with an airline, you can blame it on, you know, things that are kind of out of the person. It's seemingly out of the person's control, like the weather or a plane breaks down or something, you know, it might be weather in another city. But with a car rental place, it seems pretty simple. It seems like I could run a car rental place. I just buy a bunch of cars, rent them out to people, and that's it. Seems easy. You know, I couldn't run an airline. I could run a car rental place.
Now, this seems like one of those scenes where he's lecturing her. Like, sometimes it seems like Jerry uses the show to kind of crusade for the common man.
Absolutely. Against,
yeah, like this is very sort of indicative or very similar to the telemarketer kind of bits that he does, where he just uses it to stick it to the people that everybody wants to stick it to.
It is a pretty good line, though. He has that, like, kind of, in my mind, a classic line. He says, you know how to take the reservation. You just don't know how to hold the reservation.
It's really true, though, because, I mean, there are so many places that take the reservations and they just depend on other people too much, right? Like, back in the day, if I reserved, say, a copy of some movie or some game from the video store, they've rented it out the day before, so their ability to actually fulfill my reservation depends on that other customer returning it on time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Louis C.K.'s of the world who are too busy for their flight, they're too far behind on their flight. They pull up to the terminal and they just leave their car there, and then they call the rental place and say, hey, if you want your car, I just left it there.
That's pretty great. I mean, that whole bit's pretty great.
I mean, it is funny, but it does illustrate. This is Louis C.K. ruined my ability to get my car on my honeymoon.
He ruined Jerry's day. He's got to go with the cool, Ford Festiva or whatever you got.
Be a great story, though. Louis C.K. ruined my vacation.
Well, you don't know it's Louis C.K.
He would tell me.
Yeah. And I guess the scene ends with Elaine having doubt about being with her older boyfriend.
Yeah,
she loves being with him. She likes being with him. She's okay being with
him. So what I really like, actually, is that at the end of the scene, Jerry's got this line about getting the insurance for the car. And he says he really wants it because he's going to, like, really beat the car up. And just the way he says the line, it's another, like, really great revenge line, kind of along the line of what Chris was saying before, where you're just, like, sticking it to the establishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good. I also really like the desk clerk going to talk to her supervisor. Like, that's really going to change anything. Like, if the car isn't there, they can't do anything. And she's worked there a while. She knows they can't do anything. But, you know, it's a little charade you do to avoid getting yelled at.
I love how they're just in, like, a bizarre giant hallway. It's so long with a million doors back there.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Jerry and Elaine, how they sort of do all the motions of exactly what they're talking about, and they mimic the entire thing as it's going on in parallel behind. It works out really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. We end the scene, and it's a nice little continuation to the next scene. Elaine goes from saying that she has some doubt, she really likes being with her boyfriend. Well, she's okay with it. And then it cuts to the next scene in the apartment, and she says she wants to break up with him. She hates being with him.
He's too old.
Too old.
He's too old.
She doesn't know whether it's going to be a face-to-face or a phone breakup.
You got to do the face.
Oh, yeah.
I think always the face. You know, if it's one date, you can get away with a no face-to-face. But after that...
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
Chris needs
dates?
This to be correct.
I think two dates. You can do the phone.
Is that just because that is what you've done in the past?
No.
Really?
No.
I mean, the phone breakup is really appealing because you always have that safety net that you can just hang up at any time. You know, you don't have to see their face.
I did the phone breakup once, and Cameron knows this story because he chastised me. And I had only gone out with this girl twice. And as, you know, as I'm saying bye, I was just like, so, what do you say? I'm just going like, so, you know, have a nice life. And she's like, thanks. And then hangs up. I'm like, what? And then I call Cameron. Cameron's like, "You said have a nice life?" I'm like, "Yeah." And so I'm like, "You're a real jerk." And I was like, "Well, I meant it."
Have a nice life is something you say to someone you never want to see again and kind of hope dies.
Well, it looks like you and Cameron are on the same page. Half of that part's true.
I mean, if you were sincere with the sentiment, I guess that's a nice thought, but...
I thought so.
It's almost never used sincerely.
I'm just going to go ahead and say it wasn't sincere.
Oh,
have a nice life. There's. It doesn't matter how nice you say it. Like, have a nice life. It's not happening.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know who's having a great life?
Kramer.
Kramer.
Yeah.
He's got a line in the movie now.
Yeah, he's very amused by, never mind. He's very excited about this thing. He made Woody laugh as he was carrying some groceries down the street as an extra. And he got this line.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Classic.
Yeah,
it's a great line.
George is steaming with jealousy here.
Well, and he's also been screwing up
job.
He's also freaking out, though.
He's freaking out. He's parking these cars. And everyone gets a turn doing the line.
Just like here on What's the Deal?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Patrick, let's hear it.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Oh, good. Good. Christopher, what do you got?
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Nice. It's a bit of a Clint Eastwood sort of take on that.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a Clint Eastwood guy. Clint Eastwood breaks up with girls over the phone.
Four dates in.
Have a nice life.
And then he
shoots her. And he shoots her over the phone.
Cameron, how are these pretzels making you feel?
These pretzels are making me thirsty. What do you think about that?
Sound a little bit panicked.
Yeah.
Well, it is, because I actually found them in the desert, and it was the only food I have, but it's exacerbating the thirst that I'm experiencing in the desert.
See, when you said it, Cameron, it sounded almost as though you had never experienced thirst before. And it was...
What is this sensation?
Yeah, is this thirst I've heard of? You're like with this emotion chip.
Because I've lived a privileged life. And when my giant airliner went down in the desert, this was the first time where I've had to deal with adversity.
It's rough.
Also, my father died by choking on a pretzel in the movie.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Yeah, there was a lot at play in that scene.
I really love George's version of this line. He's so desperate and so upset, and everyone is so shocked by how he does this. And Elaine does a real clamp her nose shut, which is pretty great.
It's like... he's like the Stanley Kowalski version of this line, just full of fury, rage, and pain.
So many emotions about these pretzels.
It is really great, though, and I really like his line about how it's interpretational and that he has a different interpretation of the character in the line.
So there's a scene cut, and all of a sudden Elaine is bringing Owen, her boyfriend, much older boyfriend, into Jerry's apartment because he collapsed just outside of her apartment.
Jerry doesn't seem very concerned.
Just as she was about to break up with him.
Seconds.
Prognosis negative.
But seriously, Jerry could care less that this man has passed out. He's cracking a joke.
Yeah.
I like how everyone just starts saying medical things they've seen from movies.
It really rung true to me that people would be like that in that situation, because no one would know what to do.
Someone, a cloth on his forehead.
Someone would be on their phone on WebMD and realize that it's just as useless in an emergency as it is in a non-emergency.
Mm-hmm. You see, I like how this scene is just, it's like some really old school sitcom humor. Like, this could have been out of like I Love Lucy, this whole scene.
Yeah, definitely.
I love it when they put that cookie in his mouth.
That's hilarious. Chomping him down and stuff. I would not have been able to
put the cookies in a blender.
Yeah. I would not have been able to be this old guy acting in this scene. You know, I could not have been Bernie and Weekend of Bernie's, because I'm just a total spaz. Like, I can't handle people like touching me and manipulating me and pretending to be dead. I'd be like Jerry would touch me and I'd be like, okay, stop.
Especially them chewing for you.
Yeah, I can do it.
I don't think they really put a cookie in his mouth during that moment. I think they faked that.
Well, I think they put the cookie in his mouth and he chewed it and they just had their hands on his mouth.
Hmm. I like that Kramer accuses him of possibly being some sort of junkie, and that he maybe dropped acid during lunch when Elaine wasn't paying attention.
Because people always overdose from acid.
That's right.
And so they call an ambulance, and there's bedlam outside. George is ruining everything, and we hear an ambulance crash. Or we hear something crash.
Mm-hmm.
There's a siren and a crash. And then we cut to the next scene. The paramedics arrive. It's been all George's fault. He was driving the blue rental car. And they crashed right into it.
I do like how just before the ambulance gets there, they're hovering over Elaine's boyfriend, and they're talking about him like he's Hugh Hefner. He's like, he's got an all-silk bathrobe. I bet he wears slippers, doesn't he? I kind of wonder if this is like he's a bit of a swinger. Maybe he's always with the younger women.
Well,
I bet he can learn that.
We later learned that he was just using Elaine for sex. So he is kind of. What I really like is when Elaine says, "How did you know?" When Jerry says he must wear slippers, he's just like, "I can tell."
He does. He just knows.
Yeah.
A friend like Jerry just knows. Fact.
Mm-hmm.
Fact.
So further on in this scene, I love how they come in and they look at him and they're like, "Who put these cookies in his mouth? You're not supposed to do that." And yet, I like the idea that they went ahead, put the cookies in his mouth, and just left them there.
While they're waiting for the paramedics, like, perhaps
they might have still done the trick. He might have absorbed some of the sugar.
But I mean, I don't know. To me, it just seems crazy that they did that and then just left them in there. Honestly, it seems borderline insane to have just, well, I guess the ambulance is not coming. We'll just leave the cookies in there. Maybe some of the sugar will absorb and, you know, slowly roll down his throat or something.
Well, I especially wouldn't do it after having seen this episode.
No. And also, why has Kramer got all those napkins tucked into his shirt?
I was going to say, it looks like he's the barber or something.
I thought it was because he was makeup thing. Makeup. Yeah. And they didn't want to get the makeup on a shirt.
He does that part where he's like, "I'll talk to him about it." And he puts shades. He does that so well.
Yeah, good. Because Woody Allen is apparently furious with George that the street is all clogged up. It's held up the filming of the movie. And George is obviously very concerned. And, you know, asks if he should apologize to Woody Allen. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and then we move into a little monologue break here.
Yeah, and I'm enjoying the monologues in this episode because they're just a single bit, and then they cut back to the show. And he talks about how way back when they had first aid, there wasn't all the medical knowledge and research. And so when people who did first aid, they were just the people who were there first. They didn't know how to help you.
I feel like that must be most people's experience with first aid, because I did first aid and it's lapsed now, and I always try to convince myself in the back of the head that, you know what, if it came down to it, I'd remember something. I'd be able to help that person. But I mean, the reality is that no, I would just literally be the first person there.
I wouldn't know what the hell to do. I would start trying to do mouth to mouth, but only based on what I've seen on TV.
You're not supposed to do mouth-to-mouth anymore.
And then she says, "All I did was fall down. It's my leg that's broken."
Yeah, and I'm like, "Quiet. I'm an expert."
There's some things I think I'd be able to do. You know, if they were, like, hemorrhaging greatly, I'd probably, like, try and tie it off or something. I'd
put pressure on it.
Yeah.
I'd take my shirt and rip it up and make a tourniquet.
Could call an ambulance.
They can see my abs.
Mm-hmm.
Did you also have a magnifying glass?
Yeah. But only to, like, mouth ants with.
Oh, man. Everyone's glad.
Killer ants.
This rapport is back. The rapport is back. Our show is back.
Our best episode yet. There's a cut in. There's the next scene. We're back in the apartment.
Sorry, Justin. Can't do what I do.
Sid is furious with George. He does not. George is just kind of sitting on the couch, just kind of spaced out. He feels bad, and Sid is just letting him have it.
He's really berating him. Like, he's kind of almost like Frank Costanza in this scene. He's giving it to him so much.
Speaking of which, George just says maybe he should call his dad while he's in this guilty haze.
Well, because he still has, in theory, that other dad, that other guy who's a nice person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
So it's probably confusing for him.
Yeah. Then there's this news report, and we learned that Owen had a stroke. And if he had been to if he had gotten to the medical help earlier, it wouldn't have been as bad. And we see Sid feel even worse you know, even matter. And we also learned that Woody Allen is furious and might not shoot any more movies in New York.
I like that Kramer's takeaway from this article, and the thing he's the most excited about, is that it mentions that he had a seizure in a friend's apartment, which, number one, wasn't true. But he talks about Jerry like he's a celebrity, and he's made it now because his apartment's mentioned in this article.
You're the friend.
And you know what, though? I can kind of appreciate that, because I feel like if for some reason my apartment was mentioned in a newspaper article in some sort of way that was just like, you know, this miracle baby was delivered just outside blank's apartment or apartment whatever at this building, I would be telling people, I'd be like, did you read that story? That was my apartment.
I live at the Pacific Shores.
Is that the name of my apartment building?
I think so.
Oh.
You don't have to include that in the show if you don't want stalkers.
That's a good point.
So
cut that
yeah.
right out.
So in
I live in Thorncliffe Park, ladies.
In case you need any mouth to mouth.
Yeah, in Toronto.
And hopefully when they need this emergency first aid, it's 3 weeks from now. Because otherwise it's just gonna be like a heap of women that needed like real first aid attention and you weren't there. They're just pushing the buzzer desperately.
Yeah, I hope they're about 10 years older too.
Yeah, their friend is choking.
But not
and
much more.
Their friend is choking. They're about to call 911. They're like, wait, I know this guy.
Thorncliffe Park, here we go.
Yeah.
Step on it.
Is she saying that to her friend that's choking?
I don't know.
Is her friend that's choking driving the car in this scenario?
Maybe they got a driver. There's a third person.
Oh, okay.
So speaking of cars, Jerry and Elaine... they're in the car rental place. I guess Jerry's reporting the damaged car and needs a replacement or something. Elaine says she can't break up with Owen because of the stroke. And we learn that the insurance will not cover the $2,000 damage to the car because George was driving.
So, you know, George should be paying for this, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
But George,
I want
he
to be
doesn't
clear.
Have $2,000, you know? He's out of work.
But how does he afford his rent? How does he afford anything?
Maybe he owns his apartment.
Maybe he's on EI.
I think that's probably it.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Do they have EI in the United States? Is that what it's called? Unemployment insurance? Whatever it's called. Welfare? Something like that. Yeah, and so George or Jerry is very upset about having to pay this $2,000. You know, none of his cards will cover it. The woman, she seems kind of like she feels like she's getting revenge on Jerry when she says that he just has to pay it. Elaine looks so mad. Like she can't close her mouth as this thing is happening. And we hear that Jerry's rendition of that famous line. Cameron?
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
It's a good one.
I tried to get some of his anger in there.
It was okay.
I thought it was all right.
No, Jerry.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
That one's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, he's upset. And so we cut to Owen's apartment. And Elaine is feeding Owen Yankee Bean.
Does Elaine even have a job anymore? She's going with Jerry to the car rental place. She's hanging out in the apartment. She's spoon-feeding this guy. What does she do for work?
Well, she's a reader. She doesn't always need to be in the office.
Apparently, she only needs to be in the office for one episode.
Mm-hmm. Pendant Publishing.
They're very good.
I really like Elaine singing the Yankee Bean song.
Now, do you guys know what a Yankee Bean is?
No idea.
I guess it's a brand of brown beans?
That was my thought. I didn't really research it. Yeah, they have their own website, yankeebean.com.
Mm-hmm.
This might be a completely... Yeah, this is a restaurant in Florida. Never mind. I actually don't know what a Yankee Bean is. I just typed it in. There's nothing.
Maybe they made it up for the show.
Yankee Bean Wiki. Oh, okay. So a Yankee Bean... this is a baseball player. Coulter Bean.
But yeah, Elaine singing the Yankee Bean song is pretty great. I love it. And then
Yankee Bean, I love my Yankee Bean. That's the song.
That was really good.
Thank you.
So Elaine, she breaks it off with Owen. She's
finally
just not a place where she can do this with Owen. Even though there's a lot of good stuff there.
Okay, so a Yankee bean is a navy bean of some sort.
Hmm.
I can't see, this is what I love about this scene right here. You know, you've got Elaine sitting there wearing her like frilly little socks and whatever. Classic Elaine. And she is right now in this scene for me crossing the threshold from the Elaine of the beginning of Seinfeld to the Elaine that we know.
Yeah,
she
is
just as callous and as sort of self-involved and absorbed as any other member of the cast in this moment.
Yeah, this is like season 5 Elaine. It's good.
I don't know. I feel like season 5 Elaine would just be so irritated to be there. Like, I agree, Cameron. She's crossing the threshold right here. But I don't think she's quite there yet, to that level of callousness.
I don't know. I think part of one of Elaine's, well, maybe like all of the characters, one of their qualities is that they all think they're good people, you know? Even though they're sometimes put in a position where they have to be selfish, they still think of themselves as good people.
Hey, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like George is always claiming to be so sensitive to other people's emotions. Jerry has the episode at the cafe where he's like, I am a good guy. Yeah. And Kramer's constantly offering people favors and all sorts of thing at the expense of Jerry and the other main cast members, but they all really think they're good people. And Elaine has this defense whenever she does something that's not great, or she realizes the situation is not what it's supposed to be. Because I think Elaine is probably the character who the most often is aware of the fact that what she's doing is not great, but she just tries to like convince herself. And she always does this laugh, this sort of like nervous laughter, like somehow that's going to sort of disinfect any of these sort of negative things that she's actually doing in this moment. And she does, after she finishes breaking up with this guy, she just has that moment where she just kind of chuckles like, like, ha ha, well, wasn't that terrible, but it's over now.
And then she delivers the line, Chris,
these pretzels, they're making me thirsty.
Pretty good.
Isn't it? That's an interesting interpretation.
I like how she looks like, these pretzels are making me thirsty.
So we cut back to the coffee shop and everything's kind of back to normal. You know, they've had some bad experiences, but it's just kind of normal. And Elaine has a really good question. Can you die from an odor?
The answer is yes.
What, really?
Probably, yeah. Like,
sure.
If the odor is poison, like, if that
that's,
if there's,
but that's
poison's
not the odor.
Gonna, well, poison's probably going to smell something.
But, I mean, a car that hits you in the street has a smell, but it's not the smell that's killing you.
But in some ways, the smell is the gas. So maybe, like, ammonia, you could smell it to death. Now, the mechanism is not necessarily the smelling, but it is the gas, which is carrying the scent particles.
But I don't think it's the odor itself. I think that gas is poisonous and that kills you and that gas has thing, but it's
listen,
not the
Patrick,
odor.
You don't even know how the Higgs boson works, so don't try and tell me about smellology.
It just applies mass to phlegm.
Phlegm?
Yeah, the phlegm.
Phlegm.
You know what's great is that I just typed smellology into Google after saying it, and I have not coined the term smellology.
Smell-o-vision.
Oh, I'm still waiting on that.
Yeah, and so I guess Elaine feels like she's kind of off the hook with Owen because she ran into him. He was just using her for sex.
I like how annoyed Elaine looks,
mm-hmm.
which is funny because she doesn't seem to think that the sex is any sort of like a significant portion of the relationship. Early on, Jerry asks if she can get off the hook if they haven't slept together, and she basically admits that they have. And she looks just kind of like it's a second thought, like, oh, I guess we did. So to find this out afterwards, although honestly, after breaking up with someone that just had a stroke and can't even feed themselves, I'm not sure that Elaine has too much moral high ground to stand on here.
No.
I mean, wasn't she just kind of dating him because he was a famous, like, writer in New York?
Plus, what do you think he's dating you for, Elaine? Really?
Yeah.
He's 66.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, be that's got to be it. 66-year-old men aren't too interested in the intellect of a 30-year-old woman.
No.
Maybe they are.
There we go. We also learned that Kramer got fired from the Woody Allen movie.
I mean, I'm glad.
Shattered the glass, hit Woody, and Woody started crying and was leaving.
I'm really glad that they avoided the temptation to show any of this on screen.
Mm-hmm.
That the whole Woody Allen plot's just kind of behind a veil for us, because it's funnier in the retelling than I think it would be in the actual viewership of the moment.
Yeah. Seinfeld, as like a rule, like the show, just constantly shatters that whole rule that it's better to show than to tell. I mean, they do this all the time where something important happens off screen and then someone just comes and just tells people about it. Like, think about that whole, like, one of my favorite sequences is the part where Kramer comes in, talks about saving the pinky toe and getting on the bus and stuff like that. Like, I love that part.
And he's Batman.
There's also Elaine with all the birds,
The doves.
Doing Kramer solid.
And before Elaine talking about trying to get that guy to the airport.
The Van Wyck.
Yeah, there's George.
The sea was angry that day, my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's a really good part of Seinfeld.
I agree.
And Kramer, he's also gotten the gloves back.
He has. And I actually like that they have that quick callback to the car thief storyline, because it's there at the beginning. It's a perfectly fine setup. And then they just bring it back to you here at the very end when you've kind of forgotten about it, which is kind of what they tried to do with The Stranded, but that episode was awful.
Yeah, they could have done that with like the fleas or something. Like George got kicked out of prison because of the fleas or something like that.
But they just didn't do enough of a good job in The Stranded to even make you think about anything ever again.
Yeah,
you just were thinking
disaster.
About you wished it was over.
Yeah.
And now we're going to review The Stranded again.
And so the episode ends with the monologue, and Jerry says that the best part of a relationship is when you're sick. And the best part of being sick is when you're in a relationship.
I don't get this part at all. This is retarded.
Oh, I think it's true.
I mean,
best part, it's nice.
Well, it's not necessarily that it's the best part. It's just it's a great part. When I'm sick, I like somebody else taking care of me.
You know, actually, I don't really like people paying too much attention to me when I'm sick. I kind of just like wallowing in my sickness on a bed. But if I just want something and I can just shout out for it and it just arrives, I want
you get the bell, don't you? You get the bell.
If I just yell that I want some dry toast, it just comes.
Yeah, no, it's I like it. You know, I'm the same way, and it's a raw deal for them because I'm not pleasant.
Mm-mm.
When I'm sick.
No one is.
What if you were rich and you had a butler anyway? Then you wouldn't really need a girlfriend to get sick with.
I think you'd still like it better if it was someone you loved. I mean, if this was like a Bruce Wayne type situation and the butler raised you, that would be all right.
No, see, I feel like I'm inconveniencing that person when I'm sick and I'm getting them to make me a grilled cheese sandwich or whatever. Whereas the butler, I'm paying him.
Or he was court appointed.
But yes,
right.
But you are inconveniencing them, and that's what's lovely about it, is that because they love you so much, they don't care about the inconvenience because they just want you to feel well, and they're willing to make those sacrifices.
But if you were rich and had a butler, they'd
be like,
"Did you
just say butler?
Butler.
Battler.
Battler.
Batman?
Steve Bartman.
The Stinking Bat.
So if you enjoyed today's episode...
sorry.
I tried. I wanted to give a reference to those movies we were talking about before, but I forget what the hell we were talking about.
Die Hard.
No, it wasn't Die Hard.
My Fair Lady.
Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia. Snow Dogs.
Yeah. All right. Let's not do this again.
How do you like the episode, Chris?
It's good. I agree with you guys that we're starting to really feel like these characters are coming into what we think of them in terms of narcissism and anxiety issues. There, it's starting to become very familiar.
Cameron?
Yeah. No, I'm the same sort of way. I think the episode is it's showing that the series as a whole is kind of rounding a bit of a corner. They have that callback at the end to the opening joke. We're seeing all the characters with much more equal and important screen time. This episode doesn't put anyone's one storyline above any of the other ones, I don't think. So that's also kind of a refreshing change. And it's all up from here. You know, there's still a few down episodes, but this episode, I think, really marks a turning point for this season. And maybe it's just because we watched that awful, awful episode last week, but it seems like a significant episode to me. How about you, Patrick?
Yeah, I just thought it was really a strong episode. I thought it was really well packed with jokes. Like, I noticed when I was taking notes that I wasn't able to keep up with the episode. Like, I had to keep pausing it to write things down because there were so many funny things or things mm-hmm. that I just like plain enjoyed. Yeah, it was just good, you know. Yeah, good.
All right. Well, if you enjoyed today's episode of What's the Deal, you should head over to our website at whatsthedealshow.com. We've got the show notes. Maybe you want to read about Mamma Mia. Maybe you want to know what a Yankee bean is. Maybe you want to see a little bit of artwork created by Christopher Young. Well, that's where you're going to go. And when you're there, you can check out today's piece of other business, the section of the show where we delve into the odd, the esoteric, the strange. And this week's topic, well, we've got a doozy. It's about technology. There's a new program. Yeah, just hop on there. There's a new program, a service being developed, and it's called Lives On. And Lives On is a program that communicates with Twitter. And how it works is that it collects all the tweets that you make, and it creates a second Twitter account for you that adds Lives On to the end of your handle. And the program studies all your tweets, your favorites, retweets, and even the writing style, and in theory should eventually be able to replicate the sort of tweets that you make so that your tweets can continue even after you die.
This is all Ray Kurzweil's talking about, isn't it?
This is the singularity.
Yeah. This is him being like, I'm taking all these pills. I'm not going to die. I'm going to be on Twitter forever, yo.
So, Patrick, what's your first take on this?
This is the most narcissistic thing I've ever heard of. It would be one thing if it were your estate or your family or something who thought you were so like witty or influential or insightful that people just had to read your tweets forever. But that you yourself think this, that you're thinking, after I die, how will people know what I think about things? That's an incredible thought. I can't believe anyone is thinking this. This is ridiculous. It's crazy. I don't know what else to say about it.
Chris, what's your take on this?
I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work, you know? I don't think that whatever algorithm they've got is going to sufficiently generate Chris Young tweets. You know, it's going to be gibberish. It's not going to be as funny as me.
Do you think it's just going to be like horse ebooks? Chris ebooks?
I think it's going to suck. I think people will stop. I'm going to lose followers if this guy takes over.
According to Dave Bedwood, the spokesman for Lives On, he says that once people get over the death question, there's the fact that this will be very useful for the living. In fact, it needs the living to work. They have to teach it. And in doing so, it becomes an online twin.
I mean, it would be awesome if it were Twitter from heaven. Like, if in heaven, you know, I can still tweet and shit and stuff. I think it'd be sweet. And I can be like, it's balling up here. But it's like, I just had lunch with my grandma. It's really boring, you know?
So if you read this, it says that it starts tweeting, like, immediately when you start the service, and it just learns over time and gets better. I like the idea that you could just use this to be you, and you could just completely defeat the point of any sort of social media by removing yourself from the equation at all.
Does this cost money?
So they don't currently have any plans to monetize it, so there you go, a classic... classic beginning. Facebook's going to buy these guys for like $8 billion.
I don't think they will.
Yeah, I was being a little facetious.
Mm.
I mean, would you guys be kind of freaked out by that? Could you imagine that someone dies and then you could just kind of go and see this like Twitter account, which is intentionally trying to like ape what that other person is like? Does that just seem too unnatural and creepy to you? Does this cross some sort of weird threshold?
It's no, got to be uncanny stupid. Valley.
I guess just stupid. You're just a bot. You're spam at that point. You've paid to become spam.
Well, I really like this quote down here at the bottom where a person is talking about how it's more silly than it is creepy. And here's his quote. He says, "Imagine you just come back from my funeral and I'm tweeting about how it's a beautiful day. My family would be saying, we just put this guy in a hole and here he is tweeting."
Yeah, wouldn't your tweets be like, damn, I'm in a hole. Like, there's bugs on me and stuff. Like, it wouldn't be realistic. Like, you're dead in the ground and you're still like, man, you're still like Instagramming your sandwiches and stuff. That makes sense.
I'm going to live blog my own funeral.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be a kind of funny, if extremely morbid, prank for you yourself to have some kind of like kill switch setup where if you don't sign into something, it automatically sends out some tweets that you queued up. And so you could just like have some.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Like you're, you know, like, man, it's really hot in heaven.
Hotter than I expected.
Yeah, like there are a lot more like pitchforks, you know, in heaven than I expected.
Why is
this contact lens stuck in my eye?
Yeah, I like that idea. If you could save up a ton of if you thought of like a whole bunch of good tweets that you could do from beyond the grave, and then you paid someone to just like dole them out, you know, every now and then.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny prank.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's better than this. This one sucks.
What do you think of this, Cameron?
It's stupid, and there's no reason to do it. But I also think that it's an interesting experiment, I guess. What's that really popular aggregator, like blog aggregating service that always has like videos of slow motion slinkies and things like that? Patrick, you really like this. No, it's like a guy's website. One guy runs it. He's an editor for it.
Hotkey?
Yeah, there you go. Someone has designed an algorithm that tries to generate the same sort of links and materials. I know we talked about bad tattoos last week, or not last week, but a few weeks ago. If you guys would look at this other one, this man had the Netflix logo tattooed onto his body.
Oh.
Yeah, he did.
And his reward was one free year of service, $100.
Well, what was he hoping for?
He did this unsolicited, though. Why would he choose to do this?
Because he was going to get a Quickster tattoo. Oh, Netflix joke there.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know. This is idiotic. This was a big mistake.
I just can't believe that they didn't even have like some sort of bad promotion, and that's why he did it. He literally took this upon himself.
I bet Reed Hastings saw this and was just like, and someone's like, we should give him free Netflix for life. And he like looked at it and he's like, not for life. No, this is not worth that.
I think they just shouldn't have acknowledged it at all.
Yeah, maybe.
They should have retweeted it and hashtag fail.
Did he? Zooms for life.
Sweet deal.
Yeah.
All right, well, should we wrap up this week's episode, gentlemen?
Yeah.
All right, so hopefully you enjoyed this week's show. We enjoyed it. We're glad to have our friend Chris Scott here again this week. If you want to go ahead and listen to some other episodes with our friend, you can head over to whatsthedealshow.com, where we have today's episode, last week's episode, and about 26 other episodes just sitting there ready for you to listen to and enjoy. We've got all the show notes. We've got the other business. And you know what else we got? We got the social media.
Yeah, on Twitter, you can follow us at WTDShow_lives on. there you can see our tweets after the show is dead. It'll be, I don't know what it'll be. Curb Your Enthusiasm episodes?
Nope.
Nope.
Curbcast.
No, don't get me started. Don't get me started on
Comedians in Cars with Getting Coffee reviews.
Okay.
But it'll all be algorithm based.
Mm-hmm.
So very
it'll be really good. We're also on Facebook. You type "What's the Deal" podcast maybe into your search thingy on Facebook.
It's called your friend finder.
Your friend finder, your adult friend finder.
We're all adults here. Graph.
Or you can go to facebook.com/whatsthedealshow. You can friend us or like us or any of those things. All our episodes will show up there, so they'll show up in your timeline. It's a good way to keep track of the show.
That's great. And, you can really help us out, I think. Isn't that right, Chris Young?
That's right. You can go to iTunes. And iTunes has a rating system, 1 to 5 stars. And you can rate just how thirsty these pretzels are making you.
Is it on a pretzel scale?
Yeah, usually I say it can only be one star. But maybe they don't make you that thirsty. Maybe you're fine. Maybe it's like a 1. Maybe you're not even parched. You could also rate our show. Also 1 to 5 stars, but that one's just 5 stars.
Nice. All right, that's the show. So next week, we're going to be looking at season 3, I believe it is, episode 12. Does that sound right to you?
Absolutely. 12 comes after 11.
Are you sure?
Yep.
You know what I just realized?
No.
What?
I didn't look up what the next episode is for next week. I always say what the next episode is.
It's really upsetting, Cameron.
I know. I got to look this up. List of Seinfeld episodes. This is embarrassing.
I'm embarrassed for you.
We'll cut all this out.
I am mortified. Well, we're going to have to. And my internet wasn't working. It's not working.
You want me to look it up?
What is going on here?
The red dot.
All right, the red dot. I can talk about that. All right, so next week we'll be looking at the red dot, which is episode 12 of season 3. Chris Scott, are you going to be there for that?
I don't know.
Well, he'll either be here or not.
It might be Tristan Scott.
Tristan Scott. Could be all sorts of Scots. Anyhow, in the red dot, George... Well, he has to do something nice for Elaine because Elaine sets George up with a job. So he buys her a cashmere sweater at a massive discount because there's a red dot on it. Now, this causes a problem for George, and it will spiral throughout the episode. Jerry deals with an alcoholic co-worker of Elaine's. And then, George, he gets involved at a tryst. At the office. And it's a great episode. It's a good episode. It's terrible. I don't know. I don't remember.
But that's why we really watch good. It. I love that episode.
All right. Well, we'll watch that, and please join us again on What's the Deal show. But for now, a hearty thank you from Chris Young.
See ya.
Patrick Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And myself, Cameron Wong. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Hot damn.
Chris, you That's can eat.
Well, I gotta get some food first.
What Chris, you can get? Go get food.
Mm-hmm.
What are you getting?
Pizza.
Castle Fun Park burger?
No.
They don't sell burgers.
They pizza? Don't? Can you get some Pizza Hut, I think.
Nice.
3-10-10-10.
That's right.
I know it because I walk by the Pizza Hut every time I walk downtown.
I always call 310-0001. That's Panico.
That's
okay,
cool.
what's going on over there? There's
Mom's microwaving something. Mom, I'm doing a show here.
We'll be like 5 more minutes.
Yeah, we're gonna wrap this up in 5 minutes.
She's really hungry.
Cats are.
Oh, it's for the damn cats. All right, let's keep going.